Coming up on this edition of the Golf Digest podcast, we discuss Phil Mickelson's latest win at Pebble Beach and have a chat with junior golf phenom Akshay Bhatia.
My God, my swing feels like an unfolding lawn chair.
Well, why do they even have one if you're not supposed to hit it there?
Because it's fun! We're having fun!
What is this, custom? Mine's off the rack.
I wish Tiger Woods was here to help me with this.
We'll do it live!
Welcome back to the Golf Digest podcast. I'm Alex Myers. Today I'm joined by Sam Wyman, Keely Levins. Guys, so much to talk about, obviously. We'll also get to our chat with Akshay Bhatia a little later on. He's a rising phenom in the game of golf who golf fans are starting to get to know. But in the meantime, someone who we've known about for decades, obviously, Phil Mickelson, just keeps on going, keeps on winning. Wins for the fifth time at Pebble Beach, which a lot of people don't. It ties Marco Mira's record of all people. It's kind of random. But fifth win, 44th career PGA Tour win. Sam, you know, how does he keep doing it?
Can we play the tape of a few weeks back when you were saying that he was going to be kicking himself after coming up short at the Bob Hope? And you're saying he was running out of chances. And, you know, I said something along the lines of this will be something he builds on. It's encouraging.
I still think he wishes he beat Adam Long at the Desert Classic.
Of course, but right. But it was in the context of like guys like that don't have many chances, and this was one that's going to slip through his fingers, and he's going to really regret.
Yeah.
Long story short, if you said, "Hey Phil, you're going to end up losing at Bob Hope to Adam Long, but you're going to come back 3 weeks later, whatever it was, 2 weeks later, and win at Pebble Beach for the fifth time." I think he would take that. So it just proves that he's obviously he's here. It's not just like a hot week.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, we saw him, you know, he was rusty that week. He almost won. Then he, you know, didn't play that well at Waste Management, which he usually does. He missed the cut. Now he bounces back with this. And, you know, he added this week's Genesis Open to his schedule on Friday, which almost led you to think, well, he missed the cut at Waste Management. Maybe he's like getting a little worried. He wants to get these extra reps in. Now he wins. You almost feel like he might not have played now this week if he knew he was going to win. Keely, what was the most impressive thing you saw from Phil?
I mean, I'm just impressed with Phil all around because I'm more in your line of thinking that this is kind of I would assume we would be on the descent of his career. But I mean, he's playing better than than he has in a long time, and much better than I would have expected.
Yeah.
It makes me kind of wonder about kind of the rest of this season. Like, I think if you're hot right now, it's hard to maintain that level of play. Like, it's a really long season, even for the 28-year-olds out there. It's going to feel even longer for him. So kind of wonder how long this is going to last, but I'm just kind of in awe.
Yeah, no, that's true though. But
what'd you say?
But even when the guy wins, you guys are criticizing.
I'm not, and I'm going to take a little slightly different approach here because with this, you know, compacted season, you know, we are now, he doesn't have to maintain it as long as he did, and in previous years. So I think it does kind of help Phil. I do worry though about because he obviously was worried about his schedule playing too much. Maybe when he's 48. But if he does play too much, when you are hot, you want to just keep playing.
Of course.
And so that's the temptation I feel, he must love. He's hitting the ball almost as far as he ever has. He's one of the leaders in distance. We even saw that at the Desert Classic. He's hitting the irons incredibly well. That was obviously the key to this win. They only had the shot tracker, the strokes gained stats for the rounds of Pebble Beach. So he only has two rounds, but in those two rounds, he not only led the field in strokes gained approach to the green, and it was by far his best stat, he almost gained seven shots on the field in two rounds. That's really, really impressive stuff. And we saw with the 65 on Sunday/Monday, he missed a bunch of putts, including 17, including 4 and 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he could have shot a 63, 62 pretty easily. So if he's hitting irons like that, and again, the rough wasn't that penal, and he got away with that. But if he's hitting irons like that, he's really dangerous.
Well, I mean, obviously, we got to talk a little bit about winning at Pebble Beach and what Pebble Beach will mean to him later in the year. I mean, it's two different golf courses. I mean,
he said that.
It does. But at the same time, it does kind of fuel the narrative that this is his last chance. And speaking to what Keely was saying about how the schedule is such that you kind of want to, you know, you have to kind of bottle your best play. I mean, I think we can all agree that the most important tournament on his schedule this year and what he'd be building towards more than anything is the U.S. Open, where he's going for the Grand Slam. Pebble Beach is obviously a very meaningful place to him. But, I mean, how does this week not help him? How does it not help him with just his confidence and good vibes? You know, obviously, I think we can all agree the U.S. Open is a much different setup. The Pebble Beach in June is much different, much firmer. Rough is going to be brutal, but I got to think it's even in the intangible department, it's going to be a big help.
Yeah, it's got to help him. And, you know, talk about the stars aligning.
Oh my
His
God.
Birthday yeah. is June 16th. That's the final round.
It's always that way, though. Every
no,
year,
no,
people
but,
say
but,
happy
but,
birthday.
But, no, no, but he would also be the oldest major champ ever,
right.
breaking
Julius
Boros'
right.
record at 48 yeah. years, 4 months. So, you know, so many things are lining up. You mentioned his connections, the family connections with his grandpa and everything else. He was showing off the coin in his interview. So, you know, it would be the place for him to do it, and it would be the perfect time to do it on his birthday to break the major record. It's almost too perfect.
Which is all the more reason that Adam Long will end up winning.
Oh, yeah, no, it's 100% not going to yeah. happen, but it's
could
a cool story.
Could you imagine, like, if it does happen, just the storylines of Phil between two U.S. Opens, like Shinnecock could
oh
not
God.
Have
yeah.
been more negative
right.
towards him. And then if he does, everyone's just going to like
right.
love him again.
Well, that's a great point. I've seen other people say he's not going to win because, you know, karma from that, which, you know,
no.
of course is absurd. But you're right. That would be amazing. He was kind of this laughingstock last year, you know, kind of. Quote, disgraced himself.
And a place where he also had a pretty
right,
encouraging
right,
record.
Right.
So
I know we all didn't think it was quite as bad as some people, but it was certainly bad. But his display last year.
Oh,
but,
for sure.
But now he's put that in the past. You know, going back to the fall, though, I just want to say, and I know he played terribly at the Ryder Cup, and I know Le Golf National wasn't the setup for him, and he's talked since about how he doesn't want to play courses with high rough and everything. It's still ridiculous that people thought he shouldn't make the team. I mean, you're putting the best guys on the team. This guy is 48 years old. He's still easily one of the top 10, top six probably American golfers. I mean, it's amazing in one regard, but it's also a little sad for some of these other guys. They haven't been able to catch up to him. I mean, like you said, Keila, I mean, this should be the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he should be thinking about the senior tour, and he's winning golf tournaments still, and, you know, guys like Jordan Spieth haven't won in a year and a half. You know, it's
I think
it's
part of it's
amazing.
Probably Tiger, too. I bet that
yeah.
Tiger's season last year, like, fueled Phil a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, hey, if he can
That's
do
a good
it,
point.
He might as well.
Well, I thought I was going to say, I mean, he's a generational talent. I mean, we're talking
he
about
is,
one of the
yes.
great players of all time. I don't know where he falls on your list, but he's, you know, he's on a list somewhere.
Yes.
And I think we, you know, you can say, oh, how are all these young guys letting this old guy beat him? Well, this is not just, you know, any old guy. He's, you know, one of the great players of all time. And if Tiger Woods wasn't around, you would be talking about the best player of his generation, hands down. So that's a big part. By the way, I thought you were going to say, when you said, when you're hot, you want to keep playing, I thought that was going to segue perfectly into last night and him wanting to keep
oh,
playing.
Oh, well, let's talk about
oh,
that.
Yeah.
I mean,
that
was a gold Phil Mickelson moment.
So good. So good.
And, you know, you understand, yeah, why he would want to keep playing. He, you know, he knew Paul Casey was done at that point, and he wanted to put the finishing touches on it. Of course, now when they do finish up, he praises Paul Casey for protecting them. you know, he's the best. It's spinning. He spins everything to how he wants it. But, yeah, the video of him in disgust when the horn blows was an instant classic.
Oh, so good. Well, first of all, yeah. Preceding that was just the kind of passive aggressive. Well, I can see fine, but you
yeah.
know, whatever you guys want to do,
yeah,
I
yeah.
totally appreciate. you know, he was so trying to kind of strong arm his way.
Definitely.
To his credit, though, because, you know, one of the criticisms of Phil is that he sort of asserts his opinion and then tries to pretend as if he's, you know, out for the greater good. In this instance, he was very, very forthright in being, hey, it was better for me to keep
yes.
playing. I was playing well. I wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I at least appreciated that he was honest about that,
yeah.
which is, you know, which is totally fine. And then, and also he made his displeasure known, but he also said, listen, I made my opinion, but obviously I understand why we can't play, and we'll come back tomorrow. But my original thinking, beyond just thinking about, him, you know, wanting to play because he was playing well. It's just like this idea that, you know, I'd rather not get up early and, you know, spend another night in Pebble Beach. I'd rather, you know, get home. It's like it's a really tough life to get up and hit balls. But he had a competitive reason for wanting to keep playing.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. I also think, you know, he would have liked to finish. You know, you don't often get to win in primetime TV. It's a nice little slot for him, a little extra showmanship, a little extra, you know, eyeballs on him. You know, you had Jim Nantz and Clint Eastwood and Faldo holding court in the booth up there. That was certainly an interesting finish. But, yeah, you do end up going to Monday. And, of course, he comes out. And, you know, I thought it was interesting. He's sitting on the 17th tee. He doesn't even go to the 16th green to meet Casey. And then he tees off first on 17 and just sticks it. I mean, the guy was – he wasn't going to lose. Let's put
it down. Locked in. Mm-hmm.
And Paul Casey, you know, we get on him every once in a while, and this, you know, kind of why. He's a great player, but he never wins. Of course, he won the one time last year when Tiger Woods should have won. It would have been – you know, he would have had that great comeback story, what, 6 months before the Tour Championship if it weren't for Paul Casey. The one time he didn't blow it down the stretch winning because he teed off 2 hours before the leaders.
Ruthless.
Anyway.
I know.
We could just, you know, leave the room and let him just
go off on Paul. I don't feel bad for Paul because he you know, he won $750,000 again. He's a great player. He's just not a great winner. Other crazy stuff to talk about. Obviously, this tournament, you know, some people knock it. Some people for the celebrity aspect. Some people like it. It's hard to knock a tournament to me when it's at Pebble Beach and you have these views and everything else. But some people say that gets in the way of the coverage and all that. But we did have some interesting things with the celebrities. We had a former Miss America make the cut. We had Tony Romo hit the shot of the week before he unfortunately had to withdraw. What else happened? We had Ray Romano make the cut, second time. You know, what do you guys think about that aspect of the tournament?
Well, I don't think you can criticize it because this is part of the sort of foundation of the PGA Tour. I mean, the PGA Tour, this is one of the – I don't know exactly the chronology of it, but this event preceded the PGA Tour, you know, being the billion-dollar industry that it is now. So, the you know, Bing Crosby's Clambake is – you know, it was founded upon this idea of having celebrities and golfers mixed. So you can't criticize that. Now, do you want to criticize – how much airtime they get, or the sort of awkward dynamic element where there's guys playing for the actual tournament when there's a guy who's a 13 handicap, you know, trying to putt out. Again, this is what, you know, this is basically what we signed up for. This is the tournament as it was founded. I think it's fascinating. You know, it would get a little tiresome if it was every week, but what are you laughing? By the way, that guy was an amazing 13 handicap.
He is.
I was just going to say,
but
like,
I got a text from our friend Josh, and he goes, "This is unbelievable. Phil Mickelson's trying to win a tournament here, and he has to wait for this old goat to putt." I mean, and it was true. I mean, it was kind of funny. But no, it's interesting. No, you're right. The Cosby.
No, it's not the Cosby.
It's the
Crosby.
It's the Crosby. I was right the first time. The Crosby kind of set the template of pro-ams. However, those pro-ams, which these tournaments are built on, happen on Wednesdays usually. So that's why it's so, you know, this is this Thursday through Sunday pro-am. It, you know, the party just keeps going. And, you know, to be honest, the celeb list is not as great as what you would think. I mean, back in the day, Bing Crosby.
Please keep that in, by the way. Don't fix it.
Was the biggest star in the world. I mean, he, you know, and he got other huge stars to play. I mean, I think Babe Ruth played. I mean, you know, big names.
Are you disrespecting Darius Rucker, our guest last week?
No, I love Darius, but
I hear you. Yeah,
you know, and I love Miss America, Kira Kazan, friend of the pod.
Yes,
but you know, it's not all A-listers, to steal a term from Keeley.
Let's not get started on who's an A-lister or not again.
I think it would be better, obviously, if you just had some bigger names. I'm just surprised more people don't want to do it. It sounds
think about how humbling it could be, though.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a you
that's
know.
True.
I mean, you have to be a good enough golfer to have that level of competence to put your game on display.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like then you have the willingness to want to do it. And, you know, it's just.
Yeah, like on TV, in front of professionals, like it's a lot. It sounds in theory like it would be really fun, but it's probably exhausting and stressful.
Right.
And
also, when you win, everyone questions your handicap.
Of course.
Automatically.
Like you, with Larry Fitzgerald.
Exactly. What? Larry Fitzgerald was a 13 last year. Joke. He won by a million shots.
Oh,
and now
this
year he shows up with a higher handicap index, and yet his handicap was adjusted to an 8. So this guy won, you know, you can look him up. He will not be a 13 next year.
No.
Let's just put
no
it that
chance.
Way.
Yeah. He was hitting some shots. Yeah. He was
knocking
there.
Down flags.
That yeah. was just...
The greens were also really soft, though, because we saw some of the most
still
some of the sickest backspin. Phil spun a ball out of deep rough, and it went about 10 feet through the rough,
right,
and then another 15 feet on the green. I mean, so the ball, there was a lot of spinning going on out there. But, yeah, we've seen – I remember Brent Snedeker, the guy he plays with. He's spinning back balls. Fitzgerald, obviously, last year. So there – It's a lot.
And our
right.
our boss, Jerry Tardy, played. He said yes. the tees were not favorable. Like, it was a,
really?
It never played longer than it played last week. Obviously, mm-hmm. it was really cold,
yeah.
really soft.
Yeah.
But even then, he says the tees are, you know, 20 yards, which is probably an exaggeration, in front of where the pros are teeing off from. So
really?
Very difficult golf course.
Wow.
That does not sound fun.
No.
And it was 40 degrees, or
yeah.
it felt
and
like 40 degrees.
And it was raining.
Your
it was
point,
hailing.
They showed Jerry once and three-putted. I mean, it's tough. It's tough. Although no one said anything there about it. And Jim Nantz was still very complimentary of his golf game, of course. Not a celebrity in the field, but an actual tour pro. I was so excited for this. A lot of people were. Ho-Sung Choi. A little disappointing, but, you know, it's one tournament. You have people killing this guy that he took up a spot.
No, please.
When gross. When there's he beat a lot of other guys, and you know, we're not going to name names here, but there are a lot of other golfers who have gotten exemptions for doing a lot less than what Ho-Sung Choi has done on the Japan Tour. He's in the top 200 in the world. He's clearly a legit player. You know, and he looked like he had a great time at least
for
out
sure.
there. And I this will not be the last time he plays in a PGA Tour event, I don't think. You
no,
know,
he said he struggled with the greens a lot.
Yeah.
I think his Poana greens were kind of a
who
new
wouldn't?
I know.
They're
so
ridiculous.
It would have been a tidier storyline if he played a little
yeah.
bit better, because it does introduce that element into the equation. And, you know, he's legit. The guy's won, you know,
yeah.
overseas professional golf tournaments. He's not a sideshow. He's
right.
a legitimate tour player. So you wish that his game spoke to that a little bit better. But I agree. He should definitely get other opportunities to play, and I'm sure he will play better.
And at least we got to see another friend of the pod, Peter Costas, break down his swing.
Mm.
So we got the whole Konica, Minolta – swing vision treatment, and you know, I just think he's a unique character. We always like guys like that. You know, he had people talking. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Absolutely, he didn't take anything.
Right.
I think that's what you like start to worry about is like, did this exemption take something away from the event? And I think he only added to it.
Right.
Yeah, I loved what our social team did with his swing. Just like, you know, having people try and replicate it and submit their videos. Like, he starts a really fun, kind of different conversation, and any character in golf that can do that, I think, is a positive thing.
Right. So not to take anything away from the player who he presumably replaced in the field, but I guarantee
yeah.
that we wouldn't have been creating a video around that guy.
So well, first of all, also, there were so many people to withdraw.
Right.
That John Rollins was there as a caddy. They went through the entire alternate list, and they were like, oh, John Rollins is here. Do you want to play? And he played, and he made the cut.
Right.
So this was not the week to criticize Ho-Sung for taking him a spot, because clearly a lot of guys didn't even want to play
right.
in the event, which is sad, which
and,
is sad. But
and makes no sense. Why would you not want to play Pebble
well,
in a U.S. Open year?
6-hour. Maybe in the U.S. Open year, I get you. But, you
that's
know,
the
6-hour rounds
oh,
with,
that
the,
looks, it
with
looks
the amateurs, you know, that kind of thing. But anyway, there were a lot of guys who were bailing out of this tournament anyway because of the celebrities who take a long time. Brittany, are you related to Ray Romano? No. Oh, man. Okay. Too bad. Sorry. That was a lot. You do. Yeah, you tell people.
You should.
You should.
Yeah,
you should.
Well, I mean, except that golf swing, maybe yeah. you shouldn't.
No, he's terrible. That his, I just saw his special on Netflix. It's really good.
Yeah.
I don't even like that those kind of things, but it's cool.
Well, I don't know if how much deep we want to go into Ray Romano, but he actually has some surprising acting chops, like that movie.
Oh, my
Big
goodness.
Sick.
He's so good in that movie.
He's so good in that movie.
He's the best part
and
of that movie.
He's good on that show, Parenthood.
The best part of that movie?
Yeah. He's Ray Romano.
Oh, when he kind of flips
awesome.
Out in the – he is good.
Yeah,
in
he's fantastic in that
yeah.
movie.
I mean, yeah, he's
yeah.
good. I wouldn't go so far as, like, he's the best part
yeah,
of that
I
movie, but
yeah.
wow.
Well, anyways, right. special is good. Speaking of events with interesting formats, we do have to touch on the ISPS Handa – is that how you pronounce it? Vic Open. The Vic Open is really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a combination European Tour LPGA event. They played at the same time, obviously the same course, same purse. Keely, what'd you think?
I think that anything that brings, you know, payment equality into the conversation is a positive thing. Obviously, golf is a sport that's very far from equal pay. And so, I mean, I think that there's, you know, any opportunity to have a conversation about it is great, and to actually bring it into the schedule and have it, you know, work is huge.
Yeah.
The event itself was, you know, the field wasn't as strong as like we may have wanted it to be, which is fine. And I think, you know, we had like two good champions, two good stories, and there was even a pairing of men and women playing together, which was kind of cool. Usually they're alternating right. in groups, but due to the like odd number of people that made the cut, they made like a combination group, which, you know, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. David Law won, a Scottish player on the men's side, and Celine Boutier won. It's her first LPGA win, and she's only, Keely, the second Duke player to win on the LPGA.
I know. I was just going to ask you, where'd she go to school?
Duke. She went to Duke.
That's right.
We get it.
Yeah.
Brittany Lang's the only other one. Yeah. Just like your mom. Yeah. We get it. Anyway, our guest this week is Akshay Bhatia. And he is, for people who don't know, he is the best junior golfer in the world. It's not even close. In fact, he's in the top 10 of the world amateur golf rankings, which is unheard of for a junior to be in. He just turned 17. He is already decided that he will turn pro when he turns 18. He's doing a lot of Monday qualifiers this year. He's still trying to play in a lot of amateur events. He wants to be the first high schooler to make the Walker Cup team. He just won something called the Jones Cup, which is his first national amateur win. So, you know, he's won the junior PGA twice in a row, which no one's ever done. Last year, you probably saw it because he chipped in for Eagle at Valhalla's 18th hole to win on the final hole. So just, you know, incredible talent on the rise. You know, not that we're calling him the next Tiger Woods, but of course, you know, he's 17. You know, Tiger, when he was 16, he made his debut at Riviera. Unfortunately, Akshay is not in the field this week, but he is going to be in the field at least at the RSM Classic. His win at the Jones Cup got him into that. So I think we'll see him make his PGA Tour debut even sooner than that. He's also on a new documentary I want to mention from Whistle Sports. It's called No Days Off. It's a series on young, you know, future superstar athletes, and Akshay gets his program as well. It's very good. So anyway, we want to welcome to the program for the first time, who knows of how many times, Akshay Bhatia.
Before we go on, let me talk for a second about Golf Digest Schools. Golf Digest Schools is our new cutting-edge video instruction platform offering more than 250 classes on every part of the game and featuring the leading teachers in golf, from Butch Harmon to David Ledbetter to Michael Breed. Unlike the quick tips you can find across the internet, these are full game improvement programs meant to be followed step by step as if you were working with a pro. It's like Masterclass meets Netflix, but even better because there's the added promise of feedback. Sign up for Golf Digest Schools, go to golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS to get 30% off an annual subscription. Again, golfdigest.com/allaccess and use promo code SCHOOLS.
All right, I'm excited to welcome for the first time, hopefully of many times, Akshay Bhatia to the Golf Digest podcast. Akshay, how are you doing today, my man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
You got it. All right, well, you are the number one junior golfer in the country. It's not really even close. How did you get into golf? Where did your start begin? I know it's not that long ago because you're only about to turn 17, but when did you start? How did you get into the game?
Yeah, so my dad played kind of like recreational golf, and he used to bring my sister and I to the golf course, just hang out, you know, have dad time, and then my sister started playing junior events really young. Then I watched her and I just wanted to play. And, then I kind of got into the game around six, seven,
mm-hmm.
Is when I kind of started. And then when I was eight, I started playing tournaments. So it's kind of how I got brought into the game.
And I read somewhere you were a scratch golfer at age 10.
Yeah.
what was that like? What was the first, do you remember the first time you shot, even par or broke par?
I honestly, I remember. I think the only thing I can remember is the first tournament, because we moved from California to North Carolina, and the first tournament I played, I think, in North Carolina, where I shot like 71-69, and it was like, where did that come from? I was never really good.
Was that maybe the first time that you realized, wow, I could maybe do this forever for a living? Or were you too young to even maybe think about that?
No, yeah. I was definitely too young. I mean, I was just having fun with it.
Sure.
And, I mean, I guess I just wanted to keep hitting balls and stuff, practice, kind of how it went.
Yeah. So you mentioned, obviously, your sister, watching her made you want to play. Did you watch the PGA Tour or the LPGA? Were there any guys that got you in that way as well, or was it more just watching your sister?
I mean, mostly my sister, but I did watch PGA Tour, and I always remember I'll go to the range, and like if I saw Gary Woodland swing or Keith Goosen mm-hmm. or Luke Donald when I was, you know, when they were all back in that part of golf, like, I just would try and copy their swings, whether it was a finish or the way they putt, their style of putting, and just so that, I mean, I did enjoy that for mm-hmm. sure.
Well, yeah, you mentioned a few guys there. Is there anybody in particular who you model your game after, or who you think your current game resembles the most?
Yeah, I mean, right now I feel like my game's a lot like Justin Thomas a lot, because he's pretty small,
mm-hmm.
but he hits it a long way, and it's kind of the same thing for me, and he's a really, really consistent putter. That's probably the strength of my game for sure. So a lot of it is swing-wise. He's a lot like me, I guess. Mentally, he's, you know, he'll get fired up, but he's a pretty collective and calm, you know, most of the round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned your size. I know a lot's been made about it. You're 6 feet, but you're only like 125 pounds. Obviously, you're gonna grow. What does that give you an advantage right now, or do you think that you will have an even more of an advantage when you do gain some more weight?
I mean, it's certainly not a bad thing to be, you know, lightweight, because in this game you have to be really mobile and you know, flexible, and I have all that, so it's definitely really good. I wish I was a little bigger, because it's you know, it takes a lot of effort to hit the ball as far as I do, and I mean, you look at Dustin Johnson, he's swinging 85%, hitting at 340,
right.
So that's definitely a point I want to get to in my career right. Later on.
Well, it's funny, I mean, you mentioned Justin Thomas. Obviously, a lot of people consider him the longest player pound for pound, and he's got at least probably 30 pounds on you, but I understand you're a very long hitter. So, is that part of the comparison to his game, that you do have that pop for your weight?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. I mean, we both use the ground really well.
Mm-hmm.
And my coach, one of my coaches, he's, really specific in, you know, how to use the ground, how to use, I guess, momentum and all that stuff to, you know, to gain the most speed in your golf swing. And it's definitely a lot of that is similar to him, to Justin Thomas.
Sure. You mentioned your coaches. I was going to ask you, I know you work with Chase Duncan, but I also saw on the Whistle, the documentary on you, that you work with George Gankis, who obviously everybody's kind of heard about in the golf world. How many coaches do you work with, and is that tough to have different voices, or do you like that?
No, yeah. So I work with George, not as much Chase anymore, but I still, you know, I'll contact him if I need anything. And Alan Terrell, he's one of Dustin's swing coaches. So,
okay.
I mean, I just have a lot of good people, and, you know, they understand the golf swing. They understand how to develop a really good player mentally and golf swing. So it's really not a bad thing, because I kind of make my own golf swing of what I hear from George or Alan. And right now, I mean, my swing is very consistent. I mean, this year, or I guess last year, I mean, my results were very good. So it's really just maintaining all the good things I have in my golf swing and working on, more scoring stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never can get too good at that.
Sure, sure. The Whistle docuseries, I watched it. It's very good. How did that come about, and what does it mean to be part of, I guess, a series like that that's spotlighting, you know, great young athletes in all sports?
Oh yeah, I mean, to do a documentary with Whistle is amazing, just because you don't get that every day, and they look at some of the best athletes coming up in over the years, so. It's definitely cool just to have my name a part of some of these amazing athletes. Golf's not a huge sport. I mean, compared to football or basketball or baseball or soccer, but I mean, it's definitely cool to get some recognition in this game.
Sure, sure. The title of the series is No Days Off, and from what George Gankis says, from what other people say, from what I've read, it seems like you really don't take any days off when it comes to golf. Where do you think that drive comes from, and what is a typical day like for you? What is your typical schedule?
Yeah, I think just the drive aspect of it is, I love getting better. I love figuring out little things in my golf swing or little things in putting or different shots and stuff, so a lot of that's just like motivating, because you always want to get better, and it's just you drive to be the best, and if you're really good at the sport, and you can just fine tune a little thing to be half a shot better or a shot better during tournaments, and that that's big in this game, and so I really love that, and I love practicing a ton, just because there's so many different situations you can put your mind through.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think a lot of people realize that, but I mean, you can put yourself in so many situations. You can go on the golf course and put yourself in, behind trees and plugged in a bunker and see what you can do, because it'll happen. But I guess daily practice, it changes a lot. I love putting. Mm-hmm. It's probably one of my favorite things to do when I get to the golf course. It's one of my main things, so I'll wake up and I'll go to the gym, I'll go work out, I'll go stretch, and head to the golf course, putt for 2 hours. I try and putt for as long as I can, to get everything done with my practice, and then I don't hit a ton of balls unless I'm working on something, but I'll probably hit balls for an hour or two, and then I'll try and go play 18.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll figure out, what I did really well in the round, what I, didn't do so well, and then I'll go back and work on what I need to. And then, actually, when I get home, I have an indoor hitting bay, so I'll go do some distance work and a lot of trackman and stuff. So it's really fun. I mean, I have a really solid plan every day.
Yeah, sounds like it. And no days off. It sounds like no hours off even for you when it comes to golf. Now, obviously, just a couple months ago, I think you made a big decision, or at least you announced a big decision, that you're planning to forego college. You're going to turn pro when you turn 18 next January 2020. Talk about that decision. How long did you struggle with it, or did you not struggle with it? And, how did you end up making that?
Yeah, I mean, my family, we kind of knew what I wanted to do, and at the time, I guess my dad thought I was a really good golfer and had the potential to be, one of the top players in the world, so that decision wasn't too hard, because, I'm not a big fan of school. I don't love sitting in a classroom for an hour and, in each class, so
sure.
I'd much rather be practicing outside and working on stuff and reading a book in the library. So, I mean, the decision at start wasn't very hard, but at the same time, it's hard to, give up college, like I said, just because you have the social aspect of it where you get to meet a bunch of your, you know, great friends, have great teammates, and then, you know, you have a chance to win the national championship for your school and, I guess, be one of the heroes at the school and have some history there. So that's definitely hard to give up, but at the end of the day, I know what I want to do, and I know what I can do. So I knew what I wanted to do, and I want to be the best player in the world and best person I could be. And I think just, you know, going straight to the pros, I can learn a lot more that way.
Sure. I saw also your goal, part of your plan, you want, your goal is to be number one in the world by 2030. I wonder where you came up with that year. That's, you know, a decade down the road. Why, you know, is that, was there a specific reason for that date?
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever said that.
Oh, okay. All right. I read that somewhere. So I guess you can't believe everything you read, but all right. So
I might've said it. I don't know, but I don't have a year to be number one.
Okay. So, but being number one is the goal. You know, there's no time frame for that, obviously, but that is the goal. And you just think that turning pro, you'll develop quicker than going to college? Is that, you know, part of it as well?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a bunch of, you know, web.com, PGA Tour guys, and everyone has different answers and different looks at, you know, going to college and not going. But, you know, a couple of them have said that pro golf really teaches you how to, you know, shoot 8-9 under every week. I mean, the web.com, you're seeing those guys shoot 20 something under,
yeah,
18 under. So you need to learn how to do that. In college, I think it's still really good because you're playing against really good competition, and those guys are going to be on tour in you know, a couple years. But the web just teaches you how to grind through and shoot, you know, low scores. And even in like Monday qualifiers that I've done, you got to be able to shoot 8-9 under. And, you know, college events, you can shoot 300, 300, 300, and you'll probably win.
Right. So I understand you're doing some Monday qualifiers. You were just in one for Farmers. What is your schedule going to be like this year in terms of Monday qualifying? Or I don't know, maybe could you get a sponsor exemption into an event here or there? And then you're still going to play, obviously, some big amateur events as well.
Yeah, so like right now I'm in Arizona for the Waste Management Monday.
Okay.
But the beginning of this year I'm going to do more Monday qualifiers just because there's not a lot going on. Amateur events, and we're trying really hard to hopefully get an exemption somewhere, just because I think it would be great for me to get the experience now and understand.
Sure.
I get the feeling on, you know, playing against the best, or even playing against just, you know, consistent tour players, because I'm going to be there soon, and it'd definitely be really awesome to be out there right now and, you know, playing a couple events. But if I can earn myself a spot Monday in, that'd be even a better feeling.
Sure. What's that like, pressure-wise? How does it differ playing in a Monday qualifier versus, you know, the U.S. Junior PGA or the PGA Junior Junior PGA? What's the different pressure level for you when you tee it up?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very different, because I guess when I, like, in my opinion, Monday qualifiers, you just can't make a mistake. You have 18 holes to, you know, to go low, and you can't make any mistakes. So it honestly feels like you can't breathe, because you just can't make a mistake, and you got to keep your, you know,
right,
the metal, and just, you got to be focused on every single shot. You can't, you know, not think for a millisecond, and, you know, all of a sudden you hit it a little left, and that's not good.
Right.
And then it's one day, so it's a lot different, because you know what you have to do. And 4-day events, it's a lot easier, because you can have one bad round and still be in contention.
Right. Now, you won the boys' Rolex Player of the Year last year. You joined a really impressive list that includes Tiger, Phil, Jordan Spieth, David Duval. But you did something that none of them have done. You defended your title at the Junior PGA Championship, and you did it with that incredible eagle chip on 18 at Valhalla. I have to imagine that must be your career highlight to this point. How cool was that moment? That was obviously on SportsCenter. That kind of went viral. How cool was that?
Oh my God! I mean, it's unbelievable. I didn't imagine it to go in, and I wasn't thinking it would. But it's just such a cool feeling, just knowing that I could clutch it out, and you know, not worry about playing, having a playoff or anything, or having to make a 8-9 footer to get into a playoff. So
right.
Definitely, one of the coolest highlights of my career so far.
Sure, I'm sure it added to it that the fact that there have been so many like crazy things that have happened on that green in history with Tiger, with Rory, and then you put yourself up there. Were you thinking about Valhalla 18, you know, being a special place where other great players have won majors?
I don't know at the time, probably not, but after, probably reflecting back for sure, because, I mean, I remember Rory, you know, making that 3-footer in the dark to win.
Is, right.
And, you know, to do what I did, it's pretty cool just knowing that I can do the same thing that they can do and, you know, on the same golf course.
Sure. Just a few more questions. Akshay, thanks for your time. I'm wondering how important for you this year, obviously you're already looking ahead towards being a pro, but how important is, you know, the U.S. Junior or the Walker Cup this year while you're still a junior, while you're still an amateur? How important are those events for you this year?
Definitely really important. U.S. Junior, you know, it's one that I really, really want to win just because falling one shot short last year, yeah, it definitely hurt. It's probably one of the worst feelings I've ever had on a golf course. You know, coming off that 18, or I guess the 36 hole, losing by one.
Oh, yeah.
Was definitely hard. So just a personal thing, with really just to win the U.S. Junior would be an amazing feeling. And obviously Walker Cup is a dream come true just because I'm still in high school and there's so many great college players that, you know, all have a chance just to be with the practice squad and hang out with Captain Nathaniel Crosby was amazing.
Mm.
So I'm really looking forward to just this year and hopefully proving myself to be, you know, one of those people that make the team.
Sure. Knowing how hard it is now for you to win the U.S. Junior, obviously it's so grueling to go through that many rounds of match play. Does that make you even more appreciative of Tiger Woods being able to do it 3 years in a row and then winning the U.S. Amateur 3 years in a row?
Yeah, it's just an unreal. Especially, I think more U.S. Am.
Right.
When that 3 times in a row is unbelievable because, you know, junior golfers are so good now that anyone could win the U.S. Junior. You don't have to be the number one ranked, you know, junior golfer to win it.
Sure.
Versus, I feel like when Tiger was playing, he, you know, he was number one. He was, I mean, most of the time he was unbeatable. So
right,
you expect him to win. But, you know, at the U.S. Junior, anyone could win it. Anyone from overseas could win it. You never know.
Right.
So,
right.
But USAM is incredible.
Yeah. Have you had any brushes yet with PGA Tour stars? I think I read somewhere you got to talk with Brooks Koepka. Any notable interactions?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked. You know, Brooks Koepka came to the Junior Invitational at Sage Valley last year, so we got a Q&A with him. Justin Hadley, he practices at my home course, so you know, I'll pick his brain a little bit.
Cool.
He's won on tour, so he's obviously been doing pretty well. And he, but I mean, a lot of tour guys, not big names, but mm-hmm. A bunch of guys that, you know, I can pick their brain.
Sure. What do you, just got out of curiosity, what do you do other than golf? Or do you do anything other than golf? What is this, you know, 16, 17-year-old kid do these days for fun?
I mean, I honestly love working out because I want to see myself big. I want to see myself strong. So I enjoy working out. I enjoy bowling. I enjoy
bowling.
Eating a bunch of different foods. There's not much that goes on with my life other than, you know, hanging out with my friends and stuff. But you do have to be pretty careful on what you do.
Right.
Because you can't go and play basketball and
sure.
If you hurt yourself, I could change a lot, but.
Sure. Well, and I understand you were really excited. You got a TrackMan for your 16th birthday. What do you think you're going to get for your 17th birthday?
Hopefully I'll get into the race management.
That'd be
an amazing birthday present, but I don't know. Hopefully a car or something.
All right. One last one. When you turn pro, do you have a caddy yet? And could I be your caddy?
I do not have a caddy yet.
Ooh, okay.
We'll find out. We'll see what happens.
All right, the door's open. Sounds good. That's going to be a pretty coveted job, I might imagine, to carry your bag because you're on the rise, my man. Thank you, Akshay, so much for joining us. We wish you good luck this year in all your junior events and all your Monday qualifiers. We hope to see you in a PGA Tour event this year. It'd be really cool. And we hope to catch up with you down the road sometime.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You got it, man. Take care.
All right, see ya.
Thanks again to Akshay for joining us. And let's finish, as we always do, with some awards. Let's start with the best one-day story. That goes to James Nitties, who made 9 consecutive birdies at the Vic Open. And afterwards, he credited it to his roommate, Nick Flanagan's burritos. Keeley, have you ever had a hot round after some burritos?
Man, I've never had a magic burrito, unfortunately. Probably wouldn't be working here if I'd found the magic burrito that makes you make birdies. A good roommate though. That is important.
Good
I
roommate
think.
Is cooking on the road for you. It's pretty
keep him close.
Yeah.
Well, I thought this was a ploy to get Dos Rojos to sponsor the podcast. Well, we've been talking about that for a while.
It's a long, sort of product that's a long placement. Con, right? Yeah. It is, definitely. Yeah. Like, or Chipotle.
No, Toros.
Yeah. Toros is more in our hearts. It's near and dear.
I
to
love
us.
Toros. Yeah. Come on, hook that up,
but,
Alex.
But you know, Bubba Watson. Always eats Chipotle burritos before the Masters. He's, you know, his 2 wins have come after that. That's his diet.
But what about Moe's is the place at the Masters?
Moe's is good.
But Moe's is right at the Washington Road.
Well, Bubba goes to Chipotle.
Wow.
I don't even drives out of the way. Anyway, unfortunately, Nitty's still finished tied for 62nd place, so he fell off there. But he and Nick Flanagan, they shot 62-64 that first day. So
hey. You never know.
Craziest story of the week. This came from a John Strage post. He got this from Cornwall News and the Daily Mail. Augusta National cracked down on a 24 pub pal tournament in Cornwall, England, who calls itself the Coverack Golf Event. They call it the Coverack Masters, and they give out a green jacket. They got sent a letter, basically a cease and desist. You can't call a Masters golf tournament, and you can't give out a green jacket. I mean, what?
Well, what's your? I
have burned all photos. I've had people send me photos. There's so many golf trips that do give out green jackets,
right?
And we don't call it the Masters, but
yeah, and there's so many tournaments, much higher profile tournaments.
This is not a real tournament.
That in some way channel. They have Masters in the title. They have a gold, like the Australian Masters has a gold jacket.
Yes.
All these tournaments here have the plaid jacket. So to get upset about this, are they going after those other ones as well?
You would think they might be. I mean, this has been around since 1992. My trip has been around since 1993. I haven't been going that long. Not that old. And it's unbelievable. It's like, do we have to worry now that Augusta is going to send us a letter? I mean, at least we don't call ourselves the Masters.
I don't think
anyone's Masters,
worried about your golf trip, Alex.
Well, thanks. Well, but they're worried about these 24 chops. So anyway, I just thought that was crazy. But if anyone asks, no, you don't use green jackets. I want to go back to the Masters. We both want to go back to the Masters. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Our stat of the week, nugget of the week. For 2, actually. We start with Bernhard Langer, 39th Champions Tour win. He passes Hale Irwin, not in wins. He's
but in money earned, $27 million in earnings, more than that. That is unbelievable. He's 61 years old, and he's six wins still behind Hale Irwin. And speaking of six, Jim Nance mentioned that Phil Mickelson's win was his first win on U.S. soil in over 6 years, which I think a lot of people were kind of stunned by.
That's right, because he won the Open Championship and then he won in Mexico.
And he won in Mexico. So
that's amazing.
Pretty crazy stat. And Sam,
yes.
I know you wanted to talk about
his
swing.
We just glossed over this before, but it's interesting that Phil won, we're recording this on Monday, he won today. And last week there was this study that came out about how the modern golf swing causes more back injuries to players and at younger ages. So, and Phil has been pretty outspoken in talking about how the modern golf swing is too violent. It's going to lead to injuries, and that his swing is sort of a model for longevity because it's flowing and there's not as much torque and tension placed on his back, which is true. I mean, guys, aside from his arthritis issues, which are legitimate, right, he's never really had any major injuries. The one sort of caveat.
Not from golf. He had like a ski injury, right?
He did, correct. Yeah, that's right. He did have a bad ski injury. But the one thing is that like Phil is a freak accident to be like, hey, just swing like me and you'll be okay, fine. But he's obviously got ridiculous hand-eye coordination and is just an amazing athlete. So I question whether there's anyone else out there who can replicate his golf swing with anything approaching the same level of success.
Well, I don't think it's replicating his swing. I think the point is more of like allowing your body to move how it wants to move instead of trying to force your body into some sort of cookie cutter motion.
But would you agree that the way they're teaching the modern golf swing now, which is obviously kind of this X factor, which is kind of your, you know, your
creating
torso
torque,
going one way
yeah,
and
torque,
your, you know, bottom part going another way.
Yeah.
Put injuries aside, is a more effective way to create
power,
clubhead speed, correct?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, how do you reconcile that? If guys want to play better golf, this is the way you play better golf, is by, you know, trying to create this golf swing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, Phil Mickelson doesn't have as much torque in his golf swing, right? But again, my point is that he's just a ridiculous athlete who's found another way. I mean, he's got a pretty classic kind of older style swing, much more I guess you would call it much more vertical in nature, right? So so anyway, it's just an interesting discussion point. It just so happens that this study came out this week.
Right. And we saw him on the tee, I think it was yesterday or on Sunday, just doing that baseball swing drill, and you could hear the club whooshing. I mean, it was incredible, the speed that he still generates. So, and you know, these kind of languid, you know, free-flowing swings, they always talk about Tom Watson as the model of that. And look at Tom Watson.
Sure.
He almost won the British Open when he was 59 years old. He's still a great player. He can still compete every once in a while with the young guys. So there obviously is something to it. But you're right, Sam. It's not like everyone could just do that.
I'd love to know what player right now who's sort of under 25 most resembles that kind of swing.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's Akshay. He's a fellow lefty.
There you
he's
go.
He's got a pretty long swing, and he's only 125 pounds,
oh,
and he
man.
Hits it like
but
330
those are the guys
yards.
That, I think those are the guys that create creative
yeah,
you know, create
exactly,
tension.
Exactly. And he's all about getting in the gym and everything else. So you never know. I mean, you're right. There might have been this movement with the torque and the restrictive – whatever in the shorter swings and maybe it'll, you know,
correct.
These things go in cycles. All right, let's end with our picks for the Genesis Open. Who wants to go first?
Not me.
I'll go. I mean, just because it's a really good field actually this week.
Very
and
good
obviously
field.
Tiger yeah. is playing. He's not the guy I'm picking based on his record. Riviera is famously the one place, one kind of classic place where he's never won. He is 20-1, which is still pretty impressive. So Xander Schauffele stands out to me. I mean, obviously already a winner this year, and you know certainly you know has had one of the best runs of the last like 6 months. And 25-1 odds, he's fifth on the tour in strokes gained putting. And you know they always talk about Riviera as kind of a placement golf course and being on the right side of holes. And so he's my guy.
All right.
Okay. I like Tony Finau.
Ooh,
dagger?
No. I picked him, you know, I've picked him a million times, and he never comes through for me. So you take
so
him.
Now
pass
we need, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We need some fresh energy behind Tony.
Right.
I think he's, if you could pick one player on tour right now, that's like, why hasn't he won like 1,000 times?
Right.
It'd be Tony. So he's a good pick any week, I think.
Yep.
Let's go, Tony.
You know, forget what I said before about Paul Casey.
Oh, you can't go back.
Backtracking.
Now.
Well, hey, like you said, I mean, I said Phil isn't going to win, blah, blah, blah. Now he wins. So I got to – Paul Casey 33-1. I'm making two picks. I'm going to cheat here. Paul Casey 33-1, just the hot hand. He's had a runner up there a few years ago. And then Adam Scott, who, you know, we've mentioned a couple times already. He obviously had the great week at Torrey. You know, like you said, another place where placement is very crucial. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to make a few putts, but the scoring usually isn't crazy here. Adam Scott's won here before. He's got a couple runner-up finishes. He's not done winning on tour. I truly don't think that, and I also hope so, because he was a big fantasy pick for me and Joel this
Ooh.
Year. And
oh, yeah,
need
you
him
guys
to start coming through.
You picked him, like, weirdly early.
Yeah, third round. Yeah. A lot of, you know, potential. Mm. He's former number one player in the world. Yeah. So we'll see. Well, anyway, hopefully he gets it kind of going again this week. So, anyway, that's it for that. Any closing thoughts from anybody?
No, although I always say that Pebble Beach sort of is the beginning of when I start thinking about playing golf, which is probably unrealistic. But I don't know, for some reason, just watching guys out there gets me juiced up. So, you know,
watching them in the hail.
Not so much that part, but
it just reminded me of like college golf. I was having like PTSD.
Yeah. Yeah.
New England college golf.
Well, Scott Stallings is wearing the ski hat. Like, yeah like just.
They were
Phil
bundled.
Phil did the hat tip. He didn't realize he didn't have a baseball cap on. He had the beanie. And then he scratched his ear. Like, he tried to. It was good. No, yeah, we're not even close to golf, Sam. We're going to have snow tomorrow. I'm not coming in.
I thought, what day was it? I actually thought about playing like Friday afternoon.
No,
was,
no, we could have last week.
It
could have last week.
Yeah.
But now it's going to be bad again. Mm-hmm. You know, it always gets our hopes up. Anyway, thanks to Akshay Bhatia for joining us. Thanks to everybody else for listening. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts if you haven't done so already. And check back next week to see who our guest is.